I'll be reading from Jonah 2, 8 and 9. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. But I, with a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord.
Good morning. Great to have everybody here this morning as we get ready for Vacation Bible School this week. And had a great community day yesterday. Thanks to everybody who worked so hard on that and who came out for community day. I enjoyed it. I hope you did. Lots of hard work went into that, but lots of fun as well. And got to meet some new friends that are part of our community and just enjoyed doing that. So thanks for all you do. And get ready for Vacation Bible School. Everybody excited about Vacation Bible School? Yes. All right. Classes for all ages starting tonight at 6 and then Monday through Wednesday at 7. And we will have barbecue supper Wednesday night after Vacation Bible School. So we won't eat at 6 like we normally do, but we'll do that after. And we've got, again, classes for all ages. Tony Holt will be our adult speaker. Mr. Hunsucker will be our teen speaker, so we've got guest speakers coming in. Bring your friends and family to come to Vacation Bible School with us. It will be a great time to fellowship and to study from God's Word. So we're looking forward to that and want you to come and be a part of that as well, starting tonight at 6 o'clock. And gentlemen, I think tonight when we finish up, or tonight, if you, some of you got to bring some clothes, we're going to tear a tent or two down tonight after services. So I know you're excited about that, but it won't be bad. I hear the coming down is easier than the putting up. So, but we want to do that and kind of clean up a little bit from our community day. We are tickled to have the Malugians with us, worshiping with us. They've been with us on Wednesday night, and they're going to come and be a part of our fellowship and our family. And I'm going to ask all the Malugians to stand, if they would. They're spread out. We got 3, 4, 5, and 6. So Keith, Lydia, Lilybeth, Jillian, Will, and Miller, better known as Millard Fillmore. But we're glad to have y'all with us, and welcome. So, and they were working yesterday in our community day, and we're glad to have them a part of our congregation. All of you are welcome. We'd love to have you back at any chance that you have. RVBS is really a world-renowned event. We've got folks come all the way from Alaska for Vacation Bible School. You know, not everybody has them come all the way from Alaska. But we're glad to have Roy's mom and dad with us this week. They just come for the cool weather. You know, Anchorage was just too warm for them, so they come for the cool weather. And Roy's keeping it awesome. So we're going to talk about Jonah this morning. I thought about calming the sea, thought about lots of things. I do know, and you remember, that we had a two-part lesson that started last week. If you don't remember it, we had a two-part lesson that started last week. We'll pick it back up, Lord wills, next week. But today, we just, with our ship, we had to talk something about ships and water, right? We had to do that. I was encouraged to just dress up like Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean, but I just don't think I could have pulled that off. So we didn't do that. But we'll talk about Jonah, which is a great lesson for all of us, but especially for our young people who know the story, hopefully, of Jonah. And it is a story of great significance. And we often talk about these Old Testament stories with our young people, which is good, but we need to be reminded, because Jesus will make reference to the story of Jonah in the New Testament. If you will remember, they were asking Jesus to perform a sign. Now, what did Jesus had already raised the dead, remember? He had healed the sick. He had performed many miracles, but they just were hungry for more miracles. If you're really who you claim to be, do more miracles. And Jesus said, this generation is hungry for signs. But he said, the only sign I'm going to give you is the sign of Jonah. the sign of Jonah, which was what? Jonah was 3 days in the belly of the big fish or the whale, and then was spit out of the whale. And so Jesus is 3 days in the tomb and then resurrected. So when Jesus makes reference to the sign of Jonah, it's about the 3 days in the tomb and then being resurrected. And for our young people, and you always like, it seems like gross things we're tickled with, but the NIV translate that the whale vomited Jonah back up on dry land. So that's what happens with Jonah. But that's the sign. And in Jonah, the book of Jonah, he will make reference in his prayer in Jonah chapter 2, and we're going to look at that in a moment. We may not read it all. About Jonah talks about going down into the pit, which often makes reference to death itself. And the Psalms and the prophecies will talk about going down into the pit. And so Jesus goes into death. And also to make that very vivid, not only does the pit talk about death, but Houston can tell you that we went to the church of the Gallicantu, where Peter denies Jesus, where we believe it was the home of the high priest, where the trials took place. And the accused would be down in the pit, and the high priest and those judging would be two stories above. And so you would be down actually in a dark pit, looking up at those who were judging you. So this thought of being in the pit is very literal as well as figurative. Jesus not only goes into the pit of death, but actually is in the pit of judgment, which was part of the Jewish justice system in the time of the New Testament. Before they would turn them over to the Romans, they would judge them at the home of the high priest, which was Caiaphas at the time. So that archaeological dig still exists. It's down in the bedrock, and it's quite interesting. I think I've shared this with you before. There are no bars, not even Mayberry type bars, a two cell, because if you will study your Old Testament, under Jewish law, there is no sentence of incarceration. Have you thought of that? The Romans incarcerated. The Jews did not incarcerate. They imposed fines or beatings or stonings. But there's no jail sentence. So there are just holding cells, if you will, where the prisoner was tied with ropes awaiting judgment. There's not cells where you are placed, which is really different than what our system is. And it's just interesting things that when you're not really shocked when I tell you that, but maybe it's not come to mind because we're so used to making reference from our point of reference, which would have been very different in the time of the first century. But this being in the pit, this being 3 days in the fish is prophetic, is foreshadowing of what's going to come in Jesus, and Jesus makes reference to that. But we're going to talk about Jonah for a moment because we've got our boat. And what does that have to do with Jonah? Well, Jonah is called to prophesy to the city of Nineveh, to the Ninevites. And Jonah doesn't like the Ninevites. I'm not sure all the reasons why Jonah doesn't like the Ninevites. But we can think about, are there peoples or nations maybe we don't like? Well, certainly. And some of that is based on some valid reason. Maybe they are enemies. From a political standpoint, they are enemies. It's not so much a deal now as certainly in the 80s, especially as the Cold War was kind of coming to an end. But there were a lot of movies made where what happened? The U.S. is victorious over the Russians. One of the great hockey matches and all of our memories, probably for most of us, because I'm really not a hockey fan. Is about what I know about is what the comedian said. He went to a fight one night and a hockey game broke out. But that's kind of what I know. But we remember when the Americans beat the Russians in hockey. It was a great deal. We've made movies about it. And the movie Top Gun, what happens in that encounter? It is a MiG, a Russian MiG, and the American pilots. And so there was that thought that they were our enemies and being victorious over them. And probably more than that, Jonah would have seen these folks as very decadent and ungodly. So there's not only this political struggle between the Ninevites and the people of God, but there would have been a religious struggle as well, one of faith. That not only do we not like these folks politically, they have been oppressive, but they're ungodly. The way they live is against God. And so you combine all of that together, and I can have a pretty strong argument why those people should be destroyed, right? We can grasp that. And so God calls Jonah to go preach to the Ninevites. But Jonah doesn't want to go preach to the Ninevites. And it doesn't seem to be because he thinks he will face harm if he preaches to the Ninevites. It's because he's afraid that the Ninevites will heed his warning and repent. And Jonah thinks they don't need grace. What do they need? Justice and destruction seems to be Jonah's attitude. That they deserve it and they're going to get it. And so he doesn't want to go. So Jonah is going to go in the opposite direction. So he goes down to Joppa and he gets on a boat going in the opposite direction. Now, our boat doesn't look really, really large, although it looks pretty big in this room, doesn't it? But sometimes when we think of ships, what do we think of? Great big boats, right? But probably the boat Jonah was on might not have been any larger than this if this were carried all the way through, okay? That would have been a pretty big boat in the time of Jonah. And so you can imagine being on a boat this size, maybe even smaller. And if you've been, for those of up into the northeast, where you see what the pilgrims crossed the ocean on to come to the New World, those boats are pretty small, aren't they? And I can't imagine sitting out on a boat that size across the ocean. And they did. Oh, and I think, wow, that doesn't look all that safe. But they would have sailed on the Mediterranean and probably would have sailed fairly close to shore most of the time. Would have gone around the shores of the Mediterranean. But Jonah goes along this and a great storm comes. And why does the storm come? Because Jonah is being disobedient to God. And Jonah is trying to run away from God. And that's what the passage tells us. That Jonah's trying to run away from God. So the first point I want to make this morning is it possible for us to run away from God? And the answer to that question is no. It's not possible to run away from God. Is it possible to hide from God? No. It's not possible to run away nor to hide from God. Does God forget? Now, this is kind of a tricky question. Does God forget when we ask for forgiveness? The answer to that would be yes. But we always hope that if we just ignore something long enough, it will go away, right? Is that not? Sometimes we'll have health issues. What will we do? Ignore them. Hope they go away. We will do something, and instead of owning up to it and apologizing, what might we do? Hope that others will forget. As a little kid, when your parents got on to you and said, when you get home, you're going to get it. What would you do when you got home? As quietly and quickly as you could, you'd try to run and get in the bed, right? Hoping that they would forget. That's just naturally a part of us, to hope that we will forget. In the class time, I was harassed significantly about property taxes. But I can tell you, there are people who ignore that issue until a day or two before it goes to court. And then they want to talk about it. And I think they think, if I ignore it, it'll go away. It doesn't go away. It just does what? Gets worse. When we don't face it, it gets worse. We can't run from God or hide from God. But it is our tendency. All the way back to the garden. Remember, Adam and Eve try to hide from God after they eat the fruit. intellectually, consciously, we know we can't hide from God. But subconsciously, we often try to hide from God. And it's not possible to hide from God or to run away. What does that mean to us? That then instead of trying to hide from God and run away, we should draw nearer to God. And we should deal with whatever issues are causing us to want to hide from God. What makes us want to hide from God? Very often, it's sin in our own life. Maybe it's just doubt. It's some struggle, typically, that causes us to want to hide from God. Now, while we probably literally wouldn't dodge Him, we find out that our prayers maybe cease or they become very short. They're not close. They're not really communion time with God. Or maybe we just don't pray. We say, if I don't talk to God, He won't know. I've shared this story with you before about the guy who was at a conference in Las Vegas. And the group he was with knew he was a person of prayer. And they asked him to pray before one of their meetings. And he said, no, I'd rather not. I don't want God to know I'm here. So we don't want to talk to God. We'll find ourselves doing that. There is a struggle in us that we don't want to open up to God about. There's something we're struggling with, something we want to keep that we don't want to be open to God. And we think if we don't pray, if we don't talk to Him, if we just kind of ignore Him, it'll go away. For those of you who've ever owned rental property, when your renter starts ignoring you, not answering your calls, driving by, what do you know? There's a problem. There's a problem. Or maybe you know there's a problem, that's when. But you know, and it's not going to go away because the people will ignore you. If you remember, if you're involved in them now, remember back to your dating days. When that person you wanted to date with or you had been dating, when they stop calling or don't answer the call, what's that normally a sign of? This thing ain't going well, right? You're about to get shown the gate. About to get shown the gate. Because we begin to ignore things we don't want to deal with. We cannot ignore God and think that things will just go away. And we learn that with Adam and Eve, and we certainly see it with Jonah. He is going to hide from God. He's going to go in the other direction. He's going to rebel against God in hopes he can get away. He doesn't just stay where he is and say, I'm not going to Nineveh. He gets on a boat to go in the opposite direction from where God would have him be. But God finds him. The same thing is true with us. We can't hide from God. And so, whatever causes us to want to not be close to God, to hide with God, to not open up with God, we need to overcome and open up and come clean, for lack of a better term, with God. We need to say, God, here's the issue. Here's my problem. Here's my struggle. You already know it, but I need your help. And I need to turn that over to you. I need to turn that over to you because this is separating me from you. And we don't want to be separated from God. But we find ourselves there sometimes. And it's important that instead of running away, that we humble ourselves and come back to God. Because He's not left us. We've removed ourselves from Him. And so if we feel the urge to not be close to God, then we need to be searching. Because maybe we don't know what's causing it. Maybe we do. We need to say, what makes me want to run from God? And deal with that. And maybe we need the help from each other. Maybe we need prayers from a close friend or from our shepherds, someone that we trust who is godly to pray with us and help us through that, to deal with that. We need to confess those things, but we need to move them out of our lives so that we don't separate from God. And that's what Jonah wanted to do, was wanted to run from God. So he gets on the boat. He gets on the boat with seasoned sailors, and the storm becomes violent. And they begin to worry. And it's interesting, where is Jonah during this violent storm? He's asleep in the boat. Who else do we see asleep in a boat during a violent storm? Jesus. Remember on the Sea of Galilee? Jesus is asleep and they wake him. But the captain wakes Jonah up because what is everybody on the boat doing? They're praying to their God. Little g. All right. They've all got different gods, and they're praying to their God, and the cat wakes him up and said, "Hey, start praying to your God that maybe he will spare us from this storm." And the storm starts getting stronger. Now, these are seasoned sailors. They're starting to get afraid of the storm. And are shipwrecks pretty common? We know Paul was shipwrecked 3 times, and he wasn't even a sailor. So it's not unusual for there to be shipwrecks. And so these folks are getting concerned. And they're praying. And then they decide to cast lots. To roll the dice, if you will, to find out who is the cause of this. And we all know who the lot falls on. It's Jonah, right? But Jonah had already told the people that he was running from God. Jonah knew he was running. It wasn't just a subconscious thing. Jonah intentionally is running away from God. And Jonah says, "Throw me into the sea, and the waters will calm." And it's interesting that these sailors don't throw Jonah into the sea immediately. They don't want him to lose his life. So they start doing what? Throwing all the cargo and extra stuff out of the ship overboard to lighten the ship. And the storm just gets stronger. The storm gets rougher. We can't hide from God. We can't run from God. We can't overpower God. That seems logical, doesn't it? But often we try, individually or as a group, to outthink and to overpower God. There's not anything those guys on that ship could have done to save the ship from the storm. Because it was, if you will, a perfect storm, because God was bringing it on because of Jonah. Jonah was in the midst of the storm because he was being disobedient and running from God. So they throw them. So finally, they're going to throw Jonah overboard. They don't want to. They're even prayerful about it. That they won't be held accountable and responsible for the life of Jonah. But at this point, they don't know what else to do. They don't have another good option but to throw Jonah overboard. So that's how Jonah winds up in the sea. Because they've thrown him overboard. And when they do, what happens to the sea? Do y'all know what happened to the sea? What happened to it, Carson?
It got swallowed up by a whale.
He did, but what happened to the sea? Did it get rougher or did it get calm?
It got calm.
It got calm. That's exactly right. And the Lord had prepared a whale, a big fish, that swallowed Jonah. And the sea calmed. And those sailors offered sacrifices to God. When the sea calmed. I want to read from Jonah chapter 2 this morning. Jonah's prayer. One other thing that I'll point out is they tried to throw things overboard. They also tried to row back to the shore. They were doing everything they could to get back to shore. But they couldn't. They couldn't. When we have needs individually, as a church, as a culture, who should we look to? God, I'll help you. I know you're confused since I'm not in the pulpit at all this morning. To God. But what do we tend to want to do? Instead of having a prayer meeting, what do we want to do? Have a planning meeting, right? Is there anything wrong with planning? I'm not against them. But what does a planning meeting versus a prayer meeting say about what we're depending on? A planning meeting says we're depending on our collective intelligence and ability. A prayer meeting says that we are acknowledging our need for God. They tried to row back to the shore. How effective was that? It's not. Because they were fighting against God. They were fighting against God. We can't fight against God. Our technology, our ability, our intellect, our planning can't fight against God. But when they surrendered and were obedient to God, things changed. Jonah prays. In my distress, I called to the Lord, and He answered me. From the depths of the grave, I called for help, and You listened to my cry. You hurled me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas. And I like this phrase. And the currents swirled about me. Isn't that one of the... Wouldn't that be a nightmare to be in the sea where these waves are just up over your head? You can't see, and the current swirling, and you're caught in that. That just seems like a terrible place to be. And Jonah says, you know, it's swirling around me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. But you brought my life up from the pit, O my Lord. What a prayer. The literalness, but the imagery of being in the storm, sinking in the water, the sea swirling and capping over you, unable to catch your breath, unable to survive. And Jonah says, but when I look back to your holy temple, you brought light, you brought my life up from the pit. Sometimes the situations of life make us feel like we're drowning. We just feel like we're drowning. And to know that God can lift us. And sin, certainly. Sometimes we're caught in that whirlwind, and to know that the Lord can bring us from that pit of death. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. And then I want to read again what Trey read for us. Remember, those sailors had been praying to their God, but not to the true God. And I'm going to tell you, it's interesting. Jonah tells them the God he worships. And it's the same God that the Apostle Paul will identify to the people of Athens. And it is the God who created the heavens and the earth, Jonah would say. It's the God who made everything and is Lord over everything, the Creator, the Almighty. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. But I will sing a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. I'm going to read those again. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. But I will sing a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. There's a great lesson to be learned from Jonah. He was in a ship that was tossed about and about to go down in the storms of the sea because of Jonah's disobedience to God. But Jonah realized where salvation comes from. It is from God and from God alone. From God alone. And when Jonah remembered that and acknowledged that and came back to God, the seas calmed. And Jonah says, the false gods are all the other things we cling to, which for us might be knowledge, technology, sophistication, all of those things. Those who hold on to that forfeit, and here's the term that's translated, the grace of God. The Apostle Paul, as you know, in his letters, will say grace and peace to you. The Apostle Paul would acknowledge that grace is the source of all the blessings of God. Those who hold on to idols, those who hold on to anything other than God, forfeit the source of all blessings, which is the grace of God itself. But Jonah acknowledged that salvation came from the Lord, that all blessings and salvation came from Him. And Jonah realized he's still going to struggle in the rest of the book of Jonah. He still has struggles. But Jonah realized, I can't run from God. I can't hide from God. I can't be successful apart from God. But if I will cling to God, there is grace and salvation. And the same is true for us. I would encourage us not to try to do it without God, not to hide from God, not to run from God, not to feel like we can make things on our own, but to come closer to God, to cling to Him, because there is found grace. And at the cross, there is salvation. And that we can be forgiven, just as Jonah. Jonah had willfully disobeyed God, but God was gracious to him. And instead of leaving him to the depths, to the pit, to the depths of the sea, Jonah was brought back to life and thrown back up on the shore. That we have the hope and the promise of resurrection, that we don't stay tossed about by life or by sin, but we have the hope and the promise of God's salvation. If you need to respond to that, why don't you do that while we stand and sing?